As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
I'm excited for this episode with my buddy Matt Jarvis. I was able to actually travel to Vegas and sit down with him in person. And the good news is we're digging to disagree on some stuff. I love his practice, the things he's doing in the industry, but we disagree on some things like charging for advice. Is it just about AUM and insurance sales, or does an advisor's time and ideas have value? I respect everything he does, but the good news is we're going to challenge each other in this episode. So let's jump in. What's up, man? We are in your backyard.
We are. Las Vegas.
Yes. I was coming here, hanging out. Luckily, I texted Matt and was like, hey, are you going to be in town? And
yeah.
This worked out.
It did. Thanks for coming to my town. People don't often come and visit Las Vegas, so you know it's always nice to have friends come around.
Yes. my wife just learned blackjack last night.
Yeah.
And she won, which is
for
not
now.
Usually
yeah.
a good way to start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well, hopefully she's done forever.
That's most now. People win when they come to Vegas. That's what the city's known for.
That's right. Well, dude, I've been excited to hang out. I love watching your stuff. I love your edge, your intensity of it.
Yeah.
So I want to unpack, I want to disagree on some stuff today.
Dude, let's
I think
it.
We agree on a lot.
Yeah.
Business.
Oh, yeah.
Personal development.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we'll start on is the idea of financial planning.
Yes.
And getting paid for it.
Yeah.
I know our practices are a little different with mm-hmm. that. But also before we start that, where did your edge come from? I think a lot of people see your content. There's this confidence. There's this push for people to do better.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, where'd that come from?
Yeah, confidence is a nice word. Not everybody puts it that way.
That's right.
I don't know. I guess maybe like we can unpack that with my therapist someday. But my biggest edge in the industry is like so many advisors, I spent so many years as just like a really bad advisor. Not like bad from like morally bad, but like I didn't know how to talk to prospects. I didn't know how to deliver value. I didn't know how to quote fees or charge fees or do value adds. Like none of those things. And I spent a lot of years and years listening to people who didn't have practices. And they would say things like buy this seminar package or buy these brochures or buy these leads. And then none of them work. Like one after another, they all quit working. And it wasn't until I started listening to advisors like you who have done it, like, and they'd be like, this is how I do it, that my whole life transforms. So like part of my edge is I remember me grinding out all those years at dead ends. And I think, wow, why didn't somebody just tell me that there's like a way that works and there's the ways that you think might work. And let's just do the ways that work. So a lot of it is from that.
I look back at what the industry, the path it showed me, whether it was kind of unintentionally or intentionally. And I thought there was one way to do it.
Yeah, that's
you
a good
start
point.
In the business, you know, it was all grinded out, call your friends and family, sell them products you kind of understand, but don't really. And so I get frustrated with the industry when I look and I was like, I wish I would have was shown a different path.
Yes.
Like, I wish I wouldn't have followed the average current, because I was probably going to end up where most people do. It's like, hey, you know, you're a 6-year-old advisor making good money for yourself and you built a pretty healthy business, which is fine. But I wish somebody would have grabbed me early on and been like, hey, but there's a different way to do it. And so I get frustrated. My edge at times comes from like, I don't know if people know better yet. And I wish I would have known sooner.
Yeah. Because when did you start in the industry? What year did you start, Sen?
I did an internship right out of college.
So that
would have been 2009.
Okay. Eight. Okay. So I got beat by cost. So I joined the industry in 2003. So for people that weren't in the industry in those years, like it's hard to comprehend, but there was no information, right? There was no, I feel old saying this. There was no podcast. There was no YouTube channel. There wasn't even guys like you and I saying, hey, this is how I do it. Like the best you could get is you would go to like an industry conference and they would parade the top producers and they would come up there and they would literally like pound their chest on how great they were. And you would ask them like, how did you become a top producer? And they'd say, well, I went out and I saw the people. Well, like what people? Like what did you say? Well, I just went more. And I said, don't you love your family and don't you want some life insurance? Really? That's what you did? But there was no transparency, right? It really wasn't until like the Michael Kitsis podcast circa like 2017 that we really started seeing advisors saying, hey, actually, like, I figured some things out. There's a lot of ways to do this. Let me show you how I'm doing it.
Yeah. So when you look back at your career, you started on that path.
Yeah.
So you were grinding out, doing retirement planning, you know, sprinkling some financial planning ideas as you went. But AUM, I'm assuming, was the measure of success at that time?
Yeah. AUM, I was kind of on the tail end of life insurance being the big push. So everything was kind of moving over to AUM. But yeah, it was just AUM. And as I think back now, I cringe on it because like the value proposition was like, hey, Sten, someone needs to manage your money and it might as well be me.
Nice.
Well, yeah, but why would I pick you over somebody else? Well, you know, you probably should just pick me. And then once I got my CFP, I thought, well, Sten, I'm a CFP. So of course I'm like, that was the extent of the value proposition. It was like, this thing has to be done. You might as well have me do it.
Yeah.
And so of course that wasn't a very compelling value statement for the client or for me. Like it didn't make me feel great either. Cause I'm like, what am I really doing? Like I'm picking mutual funds. I'm putting in a TAMP. Like that's not a value proposition.
Is it worth the fee that we're earning? To some degree at times, I the crisis of conscience I had at one point was when I worked at a firm and we outsourced all of our money management.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, wait, so I'm getting paid and I'm not even doing the stuff. Mm-hmm. Like somebody else is doing it. And if they came to me and said, hey, I want to sell this thing, what I can't really tell them is I don't have the button here. I don't get to push it. I have to call somebody else and hope they will sell it because it's this big managed outsource fund.
Yeah.
And I don't think for everybody listening that there's, again, one way to do it or the way Matt's doing it or I'm doing it is the best way. But I do think we all need to have an awareness of like, am I doing something just because it's what I've seen? Mm-hmm. Or have I stress tested it? And can't come in with some curiosity to be like, is there a better way? And I think for when I see your content and the content we're trying to create, there is the average way. Like you can go there and that's fine.
Yeah, sure.
You can have this practice. But I know I look back and I'm like, but if I would have known there were some other ways to build this, you know, when you talk about just massive value, like blow people away. But we also have to be good business owners and be efficient at the same time. And so as we unpack stuff today, I want everybody to hear, I want to be a great entrepreneur. Man, I want to help a lot of people at the same time. But a great quote I heard once, there's no mission without margin. Okay. Meaning if you want to do a lot of good, run an amazing business. Yeah. Add so much value to the world that you make so much money, and then you get to decide what you do with it.
Yes.
So as we think about that, financial planning, charging for it as a standalone service.
Yes.
I know we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where have you been and where would you say you are now with that idea within a practice?
Yeah, I'll kind of go high level. Then I think we need to nuance a little bit because there's sort of this like corner of our industry likes to talk about real financial planning, like whatever that is, or like comprehensive, like whatever that is. So we'll kind of nuance that. But as far as financial planning fees, I played around with it early in my career, but I didn't have any conviction behind it and I didn't have a system to follow. So I'd be like sitting on the prospect. I'm like, well, we could do a financial plan. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, we're just going to press the button in the software and it's going to spit out 50 pages. I'm not sure what it says, so you can't be sure what it says. And I'll charge you $600. And of course, the answer to that was like, no, right? Yes. And what I was running into earlier in my career is we were coming up against other like Edward Jones or whatever, there's no disrespect there. I have a lot of respect for all advisors. And they were telling people, hey, I will do financial planning for free. And so what I ran into was if I said, I'll do financial planning, which is this amorphous term that no one knows what it means, and I'm going to charge you $2,000 and this guy's going to do the same thing for free. At that time, I didn't understand how to differentiate that for prospects.
Sure.
So they were thinking, well, I can pay $2,000 or I can get it for free. I might as well get it for free. So that's when I came up with one-page financial plans with the help of Tom Gao. And I said, great, let me just do a one-page financial plan. Let me show you exactly what it is I'm going to do before you pay me a dollar in fees or trust me with the penny of your nest egg. And that worked really well. Now, it has its own complications because you still need to find a way to filter people. And where I think a lot of advisors fall into a trap, and this is why I love your planning fee, is they start providing free advice and they can't ever convert. So they do like a free one-page financial plan and then a free follow-up meeting and then three free follow-up meetings. And then 10 years later, this person's still not paying them a material fee and they wonder why. And it's like, well, yeah, you said you would do it all for free. So of course they'll take it for free. So to this day, I don't charge any planning fees. Some of that's just me being in a comfort zone.
Sure.
But I'm a big fan of it. I'm actually a big fan of your work.
Yeah, it rocked my world when I went to a conference once and heard an advisor say that he charged every single client a $5,000 onboarding fee.
I love it.
And I was in the camp of, no, you give that for free because you don't want to miss the product sale.
Mm-hmm.
In financial planning, if you would have asked me back then, am I a financial planner? I would have said, of course I am.
Yeah.
Like we all are, right? We sprinkle on some free ideas. You know, if you ask me about estate planning, I'll maybe give you some feedback. But there was something that was awoken in me being at that conference. At first, I rejected it, of course. I was like, if what you are saying is true, you've just called into question the last 6 years of my career.
That's a good point.
Like, if I agreeing with you says that what I've been doing is wrong, at least that's how I took it originally. Until for me, I was like, man, it would be really fascinating if my confidence as an advisor rose to the point to where I think I'm valuable sitting in a room with somebody apart from the product I'm going to sell them.
Yep.
Like, I would sit here and give you an invoice and you'd write me a check to be your advisor. Blew my mind. And so for me, it was the curiosity of like, I'm going to go down this path because I'm just curious if somebody would ever pay me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of the fees that are kind of in the products, which they kind of understand, hopefully, but are less direct.
Yeah, they're kind of more hidden. Like, even if it's a line item, you and I know this, right? And Kitz has written about this, right? Having a fee deducted from your account is not the same as writing a check.
That's right.
Maybe the same dollar amount, but psychologically, it's not at all the same. Like, it takes big cojones, right, to ask for the check instead of like, oh yeah, we'll have this fee. Don't worry about it. The company pays me. Like, that's how we grew up, right? Which is like, don't worry about it. The company pays me. The company pays you. Yeah, from my money.
Yeah, your experience with clients.
Yeah.
Do you see where there is opportunity where people would pay for that fee? Is there part of you that's like, there's not enough people that would pay for it? Is there any limiting beliefs on that side of it? Or is it mainly for you more of a practice management efficiency issue?
No, I don't have any limiting beliefs on it because like Micah that I do the Perfect RA with, like he charges for all of his initial meetings, they have to pay before they come in and see him. He charges an upfront planning fee. Now, some of that was evolved based on the type of prospects he worked with trying to get TSP money out.
Yeah.
So I see plenty of people. I see you doing it work. So like my kind of philosophy is if more than one person can do it successfully, then anybody can do it. If only one guy can do it, like I said, if you were the only guy that could do it, I'd be like, well, it's Sten. He's yeah. Guy's 6'4". Of course he can do it, right? But obviously a lot of people can do it. Yes, I don't have, as long as you have the confidence and the knowledge to come in and in your heart of hearts, like, oh, this is super valuable,
yep.
Then yeah, all day long do it.
What would you need to see when you have your team in your practice for you to implement it? Would it be, Sten, show me a process, show me a software, like, because I think for it to be sustainable, it mm-hmm. needs to be efficient. So in my journey, I went down the road of like, I'm going to charge for fees.
Yes.
I want to be valuable. But yeah. Then I built something. I was like, I don't know if this is sustainable. My team felt overworked. They were frustrated because every plan felt so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like we were restarting every time.
Mm-hmm.
Until we had to say, the client doesn't really know if we spent 10 hours on this or an hour on this. Like, all they care about is the value at the end of the day. And there are a lot of people that maybe don't want to transfer their assets yet, and they don't want to buy an insurance policy yet.
Sure.
They still want what you have. And someday you'll probably get the AUM or the insurance if you want it. But is there some type of profitable engagement on the front end?
For sure.
What would you need to implement that in your practice? Because there's a lot of advisors now that are where you were, where it's like, I'm comfortable, I'm mm-hmm. making great income. Why mm-hmm. break what I'm doing now? What would it take for somebody to come in and get you within a few months to say, yeah, we're going to implement this into our practice?
That's a good question. So like a few weeks ago before we recorded this, we were talking about this over lunch. So I closed an $11 million prospect. And so he's going to pay me, I don't know, $50,000 or $70,000 or $80,000 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't do a planning fee, right? Now, could I have, he's a business owner, multiple complex things. Could I have said, hey, listen, we're going to do this $20,000 initial engagement? Yeah, I definitely could have, right? But then I think, all right, do I want to add that friction into the process? Like, is the revenue enough, just for me individually, is the additional revenue enough to say, like, I want to add that friction point to my practice? I mean, we'll do $2 million a year in revenue again this year. It's myself. I have a junior just for fun. And then I have, two support teams. So it's like, all right, that's a pretty good gig. Like, mm-hmm. So it is a good question of like, how many ancillary business lines do I want to add? Do I want to add a fee-based financial planning ancillary line? Do I want to add, we could be silly and be like, do I want to add reverse mortgages, right?
Sure.
So it's definitely like, you've got to decide in your business, what lines do you want to have? Is there enough juice there for the squeeze?
Yeah,
if I was starting over again, would I do an initial planning fee? I mean, at my level of knowledge right now, yeah, I would, because I have enough knowledge I could do that. Like you, I can walk into a room and be like, all right, listen, let me see your tax return. Like, we'll find 10 times my fee right here.
Yep.
For a brand new advisor, I don't know. I it's not the path I went, so I'd be hard to recommend a different one, but I see it both ways.
Yeah. I wonder if when I was a young advisor,
yeah,
the idea of slowly adding AUM,
mm-hmm.
like that felt like a big hill. Because like when I closed a big prospect, it's not like I got paid up front.
Yeah.
So I was like, this feels good. And what it created in me was this tension at times of like, well, if I sold a life insurance policy, that's more income up front.
Yes,
or,
that's right.
Or I see some advisors that are young and their books are kind of annuity heavy. And it's not necessarily because they believe in annuities the most, but it's just like, well, it's a good product, but the revenue up front is nice.
Mm-hmm.
If I was told that I could get paid for my time and ideas,
sure.
Like sitting in a room, I would have been really curious about that because it would have been revenue now. Which could have helped me hire people faster
because
sure. The AUM is just this like, man, I added 10 million. Well, yeah, you don't get paid up front. Like it's a slow fee over time. if you were coaching a young advisor now, and there was obviously some type of knowledge hurdle or even a process they could
hurdle,
follow, would you say this will help you grow your business faster? There's enough new prospects out there. Go get it, or try to go out there and get as much AUM as you can, survive until that momentum picks up?
That's a good question. I mean, it's going to be a grind either way. Like, there's not a path where it's like suddenly you're going to have revenue, right? So it's a grind to get to AUM. It's going to be a grind to get enough expertise. So I guess there's which one's faster to making money? I don't know. I feel like we're missing a variable of like the technical expertise that it takes, that's right? Because it's not that hard to do AUM management. Like, hopefully no one in the public watches this, but it's behavioral management. Like, from a technical standpoint, it's not that hard, right? You can outsource it. You can insource it. Yeah. There's a lot of resources to be able to grab a piece of paper and to draw out a financial plan. I guess some of this is going to depend, unpacking this a little bit. Some of this depends on your head trash around value. Like, if you, not it's not you personally, but if an advisor feels like, hey, me running a 50-page report for Money Guide Pro or whatever software you use, and I can charge somebody $5,000 for that, I don't know. I'm gonna push back on that pretty hard. That's a little tricky.
Yeah.
But you know, when I see someone like you sit down and say, great, like, let me just see your tax return, or Micah or myself, like, oh yeah, I'll find you $5,000 right now. Like, this is easy money. So the advisor would really have to be dialed in. It's like if you're starting with stand-up comedy. Like, if you... Sure.
Which you've done.
Which I've done. And I recommend to like sit down and do live stand-up comedy. Yeah, that's cool. The pinnacle. But man, you got to be good and you got to be ready to take the abuse.
So would you, when we think of skills, if we're talking to younger advisors, if the eventual goal is be so confident and so good at your job that you do command an upfront fee.
Sure.
That maybe that's not something you could have on day one. But maybe it doesn't need to take 20 years of just being around the business. There's a way to accelerate that value.
Yeah, whatever you're doing.
Is it communication skills? Is it be the technician? What would be the skill set you would say, I wish I would have had this, a black belt in this much sooner in my business?
I mean, understand that everything is behavioral at the end of the day. Like, once somebody's accumulated any amount of money, they know how to accumulate money, right? They're good at that. Like that client that I just brought on, right? And I told him, I said, boy, you're really good at running businesses as evidenced by your savings. Like, congratulations. Like, you're very good at this. What you're probably not as good at, because this is your area of genius, is what do I do with all this money? How do I manage it? How do I do with the taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that behavioral aspect, you can shortcut that a little bit. Some of that, you just have to have like time in the seat, right? Like flying an airplane, right? You can read about it. You got to fly it. That was a good question. So what else would I want to know? Really, I just want to see as many people as possible do it.
Okay.
Like, it's like being a resident. Like, I'd want to see as many surgeries as I could see.
Yeah.
And that was the hard part early in the industry, was there was no way to see it. You didn't know. You still, to this point, don't really know what other people are doing. Unless guys like you and I get on these podcasts and we talk about it, right? You just don't know.
Yeah.
Which is a real disservice in the industry.
Yeah. With the young advisor again, let's say anybody that's 10 years or fewer in the business, maybe you haven't hit to where you're like, I know I'm paying my bills every day. Now I have excess income for myself.
Sure.
I guess the fear of that stage, you just get comfortable and hang out.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I hear of a young advisor funding their Roth IRA or funding their 401k, and I'm like, that's probably not the best use of your money, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Versus like aggressive self-improvement. Where would you go back? I'm in a camp right now where I'm like, man, I wish I would have been an expert speaker early on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I would have said, communication is the superpower for an advisor to take somebody from inaction to action, to like make them feel something, whether you're using a whiteboard or just your language is so dialed in. I wish on day one somebody would have said, the sooner you figure this out, obviously learn, sit in meetings with people, get the CFP, like build your knowledge up. But so much of that knowledge is at your fingertips. Like, what people need to know is, like, you're confident and your confidence overflows on me. So I believe you.
Yes.
What would you say to that?
Your communication skills is everything. Because I think about the advisors we know that are in the seven-figure range. Not many of them have a stack of designations.
Sure.
Like, I know way more broke advisors with a stack of designations than I know. Like, I know a lot of really big advisors that don't have college degrees. I know ones that are barely, like, I don't say barely literate. That's a little bit of hyperbolous. But I know, like, advisors, their handwriting's terrible. Their spelling's terrible. Their math is terrible. They're amazing communicators. Mm. They're amazing communicators.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean they don't have access to that technical knowledge. Like, I don't want anyone to take that as like they're doing shite work on the side. These guys are really good, but their ability to communicate is masterful. And think about people in your own life. Mm. People that have made a real impact on your life, it wasn't their technical skill. It was their ability to communicate with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only pushback I would have on the 401k comment is I think every advisor needs to eat their own cooking.
Sure.
Right. So like you need to be making at least minimal 401k contributions, right. Minimal. Kitsis and I actually went rounds on this because he said in a conference he hasn't funded his 401k in like 10 years because he puts it all back in his businesses. Now, he's obviously wildly successful. I have a huge amount of respect for him. But I called him out. I said, I think you're a bad financial advisor. Now, by the way, he's not a financial advisor, which is okay. But I said, if you're not doing what you're telling clients to do, I think there's a disservice there. But yeah, put a couple dollars in your 401k. Every other dollar you can find, put in training. Now, you and I both have recently been to Alex Hormozi training. Like, I invested huge amounts of money to learn from people. Yeah. And it's the communication piece, right, that you need to learn.
Yeah, I think for me, when I look back at now, I'm even more convicted because some of these conferences I've been to, you have almost these like life-changing moments. It's like I came thinking the world was this way and I left seeing it this way, you know, the Matrix pill.
Yes.
Like I can never go back now. And it's almost like, how can I create as many of those moments as fast as possible for myself? Versus if I keep doing what I'm doing now, it's comfortable, it's safe, but I may be delaying the next like breakthrough moment, pivot point in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see that. I mean, you even challenged me in this where I'm like, hey, I think I'm spending a lot. And I was like, no, Matt's spending more. so back to the financial planning, the piece of it. So what I had to figure out with my team, because I taxed my team too much. Like
we were
doing financial planning, we were hitting great numbers. But it was inefficient because I couldn't duplicate it because I couldn't duplicate myself.
Yes.
And so when somebody said yes to me, it's like, oh, now we need Sten in a room. And if you're listening and you're selling your time, like there's only so much of that.
It caps out. Yeah.
And I remember when I went to your conference years ago, we did the exercise of like, hey, how much are you worth an hour?
Yes. Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, am I doing anything under this hour? And how do you delegate that better? We have built a software and a process where I'm like, I need when someone says yes to a financial plan that 70% of it is just so dialed in.
Yes.
We collect this information, we put it through these tools. I'm still going to be in there to sprinkle some magic on it, put me on a whiteboard in front of a prospect, I'll close them and I'll be there to deliver it.
Yeah.
But if I was to come to you and say, hey, your team can do 80% of this work. And let's imagine we're 5 years ago and you're still in, hey, I'm practice building phase, like I'm going to be in this business for at least 10 more years. What would it take for you to say, yes, we'll start doing that?
Well, yeah, I'd say your team has to be doing 80% of the work. And that's where a lot of advisors go. Like they're the ones putting the data into MoneyGuide Pro or to whatever. I can say that one, but any software it is. Yeah, you know, your team's got to be doing the bulk of the lifting because it goes back to that example that we talked about is the what's the value of your time, right? If I'm trying to get to, let's just quick math. If I'm trying to do $1 million a year and I'm working 6 months a year, that gives me 1,000 hours. That's $1,000 an hour. No. If I'm doing $20 an hour work, it ain't never going to pencil out, right? It's never going to pencil out. So, but yeah, any systems and processes you have, right? That's incredible, right? If it's my apprehension, somebody asked me the other day if I'm anti-software, and not at all. Like we use a lot of software. What I'm anti is that a lot of these become like this enormous time suck, right? So people say, well, I've spent Kitsis study? So people have spent like 16 hours building a financial plan. But for whom are you building a financial plan that takes 16 hours? Like, are you hand modeling out like on a paper Excel? But you know, I'm really excited to see what you guys have come up with because obviously it's based on what you've done in the trenches, right? You have a very successful practice, coached a lot of advisors versus software that was built by engineers by what they thought would work out.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Because what we ran into is the tools were great, you know, whether it's List to Plan, eMoney, MoneyGuide Pro, Right Capital, but they were never the client-facing piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like if my financial plan was me hitting print on those tools and then trying to by hand type out an executive summary, summarizing this data from 50 pages down to 2 pages, it was inefficient, frustrating for the team.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, we have to solve the piece that takes all this data and puts it into a deliverable where the client's like, okay, this makes sense.
Yes.
Like, give me just the most potent piece. You know, you talk about the one pager. I've had a hard time getting it on one page, but it shouldn't be 50.
No, it shouldn't be 50. Yeah. And one isn't sacred. Like that wasn't the 11th commandment, right? Yes. But it's a nice forcing mechanism, whether it's where it's one or two. And I always, for those longer plans, I always like to call it the highlighter test. Like print that thing out, get a highlighter out and just highlight for me like anything that's specific, actionable advice to that client.
For that person, yeah.
Right? So the 47th percentile of the Monte Carlo illustration, that's not specific actionable advice. Like let's throw away all those pages.
Yeah.
So talk about like how are you bridging the gap from sort of we'll call this traditional financial planning software, which is a lot of noise, almost no action items, right? To like the bridging the gap between that and you at a whiteboard.
Yep.
Right. These feel like opposite ends of the extreme. All the value is on that whiteboard end of the extreme. But to your point, it doesn't scale at all. Like to train another Sten, which people can become, like they can learn what you do, but that's a heavy lift.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said for within financial planning, similar to like our practices, there's enough overlap to where we could say, I bet we do 80% of the stuff the same.
Yes.
And when it comes to financial planning, even with the tools, I bet 80% of the stuff should be common between all of us. If we're all doing a completely different financial planning, it's like, maybe there's some nuance if you're doing cost segregation or like you want to challenge your property tax and save some money. Sure. That stuff's on the fringe. Like, I think there's an efficient, high quality financial plan that is, should be pretty common, especially if you're working with all business owners, you can streamline that.
All retirees, whatever the case may be, all accumulators, all doctors, whatever your niche is. Yeah.
And so with our tool Plan Score, we break it down to cash flow is a category we should all talk about.
Sure.
Investment planning, you know, whether that means you're putting money in the market or this person's like real estate, like how are they investing their money? Retirement planning, which we all talk about. Tax strategy, which I hope you guys talk a lot about this, that you should talk about. Estate planning, and then risk management. And so our tool, there's six categories to talk about.
Sure.
And for us, we work with a lot of business owners, so we have a category called business strength. But then when it comes to cash flow, it's like, I believe you should talk about these things. What are your cash reserves? What is your spending plan or budget? And how do we rank those? And then how are you using debt?
Sure.
And so we've come up with a scale for each one of those to where you can say, is this person in the red, in the orange, or in the green on this category? And we've clearly defined what those tiers are. And so what if an advisor can go through a tool and just click, there are three out of five here, there are two out of five here. And now all of a sudden you're giving them this like attractive looking summary. And then there's spots for you to type in your observations and like clear recommendations. But what if I could give you a 14 page, really sexy deliverable that a client actually understands, and it ends with six action items?
Can I delete 13 of the pages?
If you want me, just the last one.
Did you ever see, oh, no, it sounds really cool. And for most advisors, I think having that template, not I think, like having that template is critical, right? So like as you and I know, staring at a blank piece of paper is terrifying for most people. Like absolutely terrifying, right? Even just staring at a tax return is terrifying. But to say, and here's a coach taught me this a long time ago, we think it's about finding the answers, but it's really about knowing what questions to ask. And so what it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that what you've built out is really the questions to ask, right? Where are you at on your cash flow? Where are you at on these things? It's not about knowing that, you know, 5 + 5 = 10. It's about like, hey, how are you going to pay for retirement in year 13?
Yeah.
Right.
And I think the nuance becomes in the first versions of the tool that we tried. And I think a lot of this comes back to like getting in the arena, the man in the arena poem. I have that up on my wall at the office. Like that hits every time I read it. Is like, just get in it. Like try stuff. Be wise getting into it. Don't start financial planning tomorrow with no plan, no process. And like, you know, finger in the wind, like what should I charge? But at some point you just have to start doing it. And when someone says no, you're like, what, did I overcharge? Did I not communicate well? And so our first version of the tool, I think, left too much freedom for the advisor. Meaning I was like, what kind of tool would I want? Well, I'd want a tool that I had full control over.
Yes.
Well, when you do that, it's not efficient because I'm still like, here you go, do your thing. And so we had to say, what if we can make 70 to 80% of this? Like you click through, you select the thing, and then leave space for you because every client's slightly different.
Of course.
Like an advisor needs to go in there and say, well, yeah, this is true of John, but for Susan, all the facts are the same, but she wants this instead of that. And my hope, and because this was part of my frustration to your point, was like, I was trying to figure this out, looking around, nobody else was doing it, was coming out the other side of it and being like, what would it take to add financial planning to a practice and actually be glad you did it?
To add fee for service financial
planning.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Or fee for planning.
Yeah, a process where you're actually generating revenue out of it, as opposed to kind of the more sprinkle on top, hyper-efficient, get to the AUM or the insurance. Where I'm out there telling advisors, hey, there is a way to do this, but I also don't want to talk you into something that you're going to regret 2 years from now. Which I think sounds kind of like what you, where you've been apprehensive is like, why do it if it actually hurts my practice more than helps it?
Yeah. Well, and the thing with all software, I think the trap that advisors fall into is they think that the software becomes the solution and not a tool, right? So the software, I mean, maybe it's like a plane with autopilot, but you still got to know what to do in the autopilot. Why the pilot shuts off. But at the same point, to your point of like 80% of clients are the same, and they are, right? At the end of the day, the numbers are the same, the tax code's the same. To have a complete zero framework, like if I'm going to build this airplane from scratch every time, that's also wildly, wildly inefficient.
That's right.
Yeah, no, it'd be super interesting to see your software, your process. I mean, I've definitely been around long enough to see a lot come and go.
That's right.
I have a lot of confidence in you because you have a great track record. What was it? Who just bit the dust recently?
Elements.
Reese Harper Elements.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah, being in the software space, I was like,
this software is insane.
But it's so rapidly changing. And then and for me, I'm just like, AI is here.
Yes.
At what point, you know, do you create something and then next week it's better, better, better? I was like, so, but for me, I think I want to help tackle the deliverable efficiency build.
Yes.
But we're not going against e-money or, you know, a holistic plan. But I was emailing Roger, one of the holistic plan founders the other day.
Roger,
and he mentioned that a lot of advisors find their tool because they want a quick win. Like they're like, oh, I have this question. It needs to get me this one client. He's like, where they fail to follow through on is building a process within their business to sustain the tool.
Yes.
Versus it being like a flash in the pan thing. So, so I think to your point, it's one thing to say, hey, here's a tool, go charge for planning. It's another to say, but here's how your practice needs to evolve to do it well.
Yes. Yeah, it has to be part of a system. And for smaller practices, forcing mechanisms seem to be like the most efficient tool. They're like the most reliable one. So whether that's, for me, it was my plan has to fit on one page. Like, all right, that's a forcing mechanism. I got to be really succinct. I got to be really tight. And I still have to have 12-point font. Otherwise, I won't be able to read it, right? Same with a software program. If you've got one that can keep these guardrails in place, if you will, right, that's going to make a big difference so that you're not wandering all over the place. That's where advisors get lost, right? Even if they were able to quote the fee and the client says yes, and then they spend kind of your earlier example, they spend 20 or 30 hours doing work that like 80% of it really was already in a template, right? So it's like, yeah, yes, you spent 30 hours on this. You probably could have done it in three or maybe in 45 minutes had you not been sort of wandering through the wilderness.
Yeah. If a young advisor was, say, 3 or 4 years in the business, and they came to you and they said, Matt, I want to come into your practice and I want to lead the charge and add financial planning revenue to our business, would you be open to somebody else doing it?
That's an interesting, it would depend on their track record.
So if they were somewhat qualified to deliver, you know, $2,500 financial plan, and the reason I asked that, myself recently as I've coached some young advisors and whether they're career changers or they're like, how do I get into a firm and add value? Because I feel like a lot of young advisors, if I came to you and I was a young advisor, I'd pretty much be asking you to pay me to train me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, please set me up for the rest of my life with all your skills, but would you give me a salary
on top
at the same
of that.
Time?
And so a cut of the revenue.
Yeah,
and kind of get equity too. Yeah.
And it's like, well, for us, what's the win? And I've found myself telling them, imagine going into a practice and saying, hey, you guys are doing AUM well, you have some insurance. I want to bring a six-figure revenue stream to your business. Obviously, there'd be some selling, like what's your process? Sure. How are you capable of doing it? It is probably not the best thing for you to start doing overnight. Obviously, you got a lot of other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But if somebody came to you and said, hey, I have a system, how would you receive that?
That's interesting. Your example of people coming in wanting to get paid to learn from you. There's this old story. Warren Buffett tells this story. Have you ever heard this one where he goes to, when he was young, after he graduated from college, he went to Benjamin Graham, the legendary Benjamin Graham, and he said, hey, can I intern? Can I be a free intern here? And Benjamin Graham says, no, because I think you're overpricing your skills. And Benjamin Graham's point was like, even if you come in here for free, that's not a good deal for me.
That's right.
And so, I mean, we'd have to pick apart the nuances of your scenario, right? But I think it's certainly a better place to come in. Like, here's where I can bring value to this practice versus, will you hand me all your clients that you earned and a salary and a cut of revenue, right? Right. Anytime you can bring value to the equation, you're going to get a lot further ahead.
Yeah.
Right.
As I've coached thousands of advisors, I realize that most advisors do not have clarity on the next best decision they should make. They just work harder and longer and hope that's going to get them to success. I want to invite you to join Basecamp. This is where all of you should start if you want to be an elite advisor. Within Basecamp, you will hang out with peer-led cohorts. You'll get my full library of whiteboard videos. How can you be a great communicator? You'll get full access to our RESIST framework, which I believe is what every advisor needs to be an elite level advisor. In addition to that, you'll have access to the Basecamp forum to ask your questions. There's no reason we should be in this business alone. Let's share our best practices and help each other level up as fast as possible. Visit gobeelite.com. Join our Basecamp membership today and start your ascent towards becoming an elite advisor.
I do think there's an issue for advisors that have hit some efficiency towards like we need new talent that can help alleviate some of the tasks that we're currently only able to do on our team. I know I've struggled with this.
Yeah.
Bring in a junior advisor, they're pretty excited, train them up, pay them a salary, give them some bonuses. And then you hit this point, and I've struggled with this, where they get comfortable.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, I need you to push me. I need some tenacity. What is your advice now, you coach young advisors, to come to a firm where you're really asking for something?
Mm-hmm.
Like, pay me to train me. What is a better angle for that?
On the young advisor side, I find myself more working with advisors that are bringing someone in, right? But either way.
Are you hearing the frustration from them? Like, are we all?
Oh yeah, we're all in the same place. Like, where do you, some of this is like a generational, like the older guys always complain about the young guys who don't have work ethic and whatnot.
Yeah.
But the skill set, what I kind of boil it back down, the skill set that makes someone a really good advisor, like the skill set that got you and I where we're at, is not the same skill set for training an advisor or building a team. And so one of the things I think we miss as advisors as we get to the, and why we plateau, is we say like, hey, my skill set took me as far as I can get, and I don't want to develop this other skill set. And I'm sort of also like upset that I can't magically do this. Like I'm a baller at doing this. How come I'm not a baller at the other? It must be because the talent sucks. Like that's got to be it. But to have to your scenario, to have something for that Gen 2 advisor to do besides just sit in meetings. Like the mistake I see advisors make, they hire Gen 2, they say, hey, you sit in my meeting and take notes. That's what a secretary does. Like you're not transferring credibility. They're not actually making your life easier. You're not establishing credibility with the client, right? So if you're looking, I usually hand over value adds to them. Like, hey, you're going to talk about this value add. You're going to work on this thing. But if you say, hey, well, we want to roll out paid for financial planning and they can own that. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not if you can get a revenue stream to go with it?
Yeah. I think I've talked to some college programs too. And I think there's a desire in this next generation of advisors for like something different than what they maybe heard, which is like the older advisor in a suit, you know, slinging product.
Sure. Sure.
You know, you do it for 20, 30 years, you're eventually successful. Like I think if that's the motivating speech we're still giving, that's probably the reason why we're not getting a lot of new advisors.
Yeah. If we have a real bait and switch in our industry, which is like, hey, you can come and do comprehensive financial planning, but really it's still, you need to go out and beat the streets. Something. Right. And so we're not attracting the beat the street kind of people. Like we're not attracting the people that are good at communications and sales. Mm-hmm. We're like literally saying, hey, if you have a deep technical knowledge, come and work for us. Hey, now that you're here, like we need you to go out and hustle business.
You'll get them.
Yeah. And that's very rarely is that the same person, right? There's a few of us that are, but usually it's not.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to know if I'm, Ted Jenkins, who we both know out of Atlanta, he says there's two types of advisors. There's indoor cats and outdoor cats. Hmm. And like you can try to bring an outdoor cat indoors, it's not going to work super well. And if you let your indoor cat outdoors, it's not going to work super well either. Yeah. So he says, know what kind of advisor you have. Yeah. So if you're bringing in indoor cats and they have a great spot, yeah, to have them do paid for financial planning, like you can close the deals and they can do all the legwork. Oh, that's a great plan.
Yeah. No, I feel that when you say that, because I look back and I tried to, when I had a team, built an office, and I was like, oh, I want to get some other advisors in here. And I was like, I want more me's.
Yeah.
You know, where we're all just cranking it out. And so I had three other advisors in the office, and they're all kind of coming and going as they pleased. And, you know, and then I realized I'm making a little bit of spread on top. I was like building this small little firm. Mm-hmm. And then one of them would do something and a client would complain. And all of a sudden I realized like I'm taking on quite a bit of risk here and not getting paid very much. And there's really not a culture here because it's just a bunch of individuals doing their own thing. And I had to step back and evaluate and be like, well, what kind of firm do I want to run? Mm-hmm. And I had to shift to say, I don't think I need a bunch of outside cats in this office. Like, I think I'm uniquely gifted in a certain way. And I think there's other advisors that want to come in and serve people well that don't necessarily need to like run the firm. Yes. and be their own advisor. Mm-hmm. And so I had to shift to saying, I want to find great advisors that want to serve people really well, mm-hmm. but they don't have to be the entrepreneur. You know, they can be an entrepreneur.
Sure.
And so it went from, you know, my inexperience of being like, this is what I see firms doing. So this must be the way to do it. Let's all cost share, you know, share the team. And then it just became pretty unruly.
Yeah, totally. And I want to pull back to something you mentioned earlier, which is being super intentional about the kind of practice you want to build. Mm-hmm. Because you know, there is this temptation. And that was the old like wirehouse model. Like, let's get a bunch of dudes in here because there's always guys and we'll tear the walls off this place and we'll go out, we'll sell everybody. And it's like, all right, that is an atmosphere. And if that's the atmosphere you want, you can. I worry, and Mike and I have talked about this a lot. I worry that a lifestyle practice is not conducive to an enterprise model because younger advisors come in and age is not the issue here. That doesn't matter their age. They come in and they see someone like me or someone like you or someone like Mike and say, wait, you're doing seven figures and you're taking the whole summer off. Well, I should be able to do.
I want that too.
I want that same thing. And there's this disconnect. We're not communicating the messaging. Like to earn that, like here's what's required. Mm-hmm. It's not getting a CFP. Like that's not what required to do it.
Yeah.
It's having the communication skills that you mentioned earlier, the following the systems, mm-hmm. All those things. Like that's the only way you can earn that. So yeah, we end up like setting a bad example, right? Because it's like, same like when I see you at a whiteboard, right? Oh, Sten just rolled in here. He found a white, like a marker on the floor, like shook some ink, licked it. And then all of a sudden there was a financial plan on the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all I need to do. It's like, wait, there's a lot of repetition that went into this. But let's get back to your software, right? Like to find someone that has all of those skill sets or even that skill set to be able to pull all that technical knowledge out of thin air, what appears to be thin air, that's a rare trait. And it might not even be a trait that's necessary. Yeah. Kind of like our analogy, like, sure, is there somebody who can build an airplane from scratch? Yeah, there is. That's an unnecessary skill.
That's fair.
Right? So it's almost like we've become overdeveloped in these areas, which is probably one of the reasons why we might shun these other things. Like, yeah, that's for wimps. That's for kids that don't know how to do this.
Yeah. And I meet some advisors that are purists in the fact where they probably say you shouldn't manage money or sell insurance. Like the best of us just get paid hourly to build financial plans.
Yeah.
I'm not in that camp at all. I did struggle at times when all I was doing was selling product.
Mm-hmm.
I've since realized like there's so much value to be added there. Of course, these people are way better off with us than without us. When I think about, if we think about what's the ideal practice, if mm-hmm. there is one, I would say it's hyper efficient.
Yep.
Which when I think about when you say lifestyle practice, I'm like, I think, and I know you well now, like I observe Matt being able to not just be consumed by his business.
Mm-hmm.
He's making great revenue, but also has a life.
Yeah.
I want that too. At different stages of our career, I think there's times where you're like grinding it out, you know, where you're just like, hey, I'm here, I'm in the office, I'm not traveling, I'm not living on a sailboat like yet, but maybe someday. What is our calling for an advisor? What is true of all of us in those seasons that like, should we run the most profitable value add business? Or is there an element where if we say, hey, I'm making enough money for myself, I'm going to kind of coast. Are we doing something wrong?
Oh boy, that's an interesting one. Yeah, you can argue that either way. Like if you get to the point where you have a 7-figure practice, right? And we're not talking like 7 figures divided by 16 people. We're like talking like the book that you service is generating 7 figures, ideally net. Like you have an incredible skill set to get that way. And so there's an argument to be made that if you're coasting from that point, like you're robbing society of that. Now that's a pretty deep moral one, yeah. Right? Like how far do we go with that? Because I also see that on broke advisors. Like I go hang, sure. You know, when I used to get invited to conferences of broke advisors, you know, people would be patting themselves on the back. They say, well, I'm at capacity. You're at capacity. How many clients? I have 12 clients. Or are they paying you like $100,000 a piece? Well, no, they're paying $100 a month subscription fee. Yeah. Okay, so you're not at capacity. Like you're just being lazy. Like there was an episode the other day by Kitsis and Carl saying like, hey, you should take on these low fee clients because it's like good for the industry. No, if you want to do pro bono work, like God bless you, like really, like that's what you do on Saturdays or Sundays, like you have pro bono. Yeah, but I'm going to run my practice maximal efficient, maximal profitability. But there is a point where you say like, do I keep going to the next level? Do I go to 2 advisors, to 10 advisors, to like, should I become Ron Carson? Mm-hmm. Has Ron Carson got to the top of the mountain or did he get Omani? Did he get lost along the way?
Yeah.
It's a deep question.
Yeah, I do.
What have you found, man? I mean, you guys are crushing it. You've got your coaching network. You've got advisors. You got three kids.
Want to have a life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me earlier in the career, and this is part of my story, is I had kind of a handful of father figures growing up. We moved a lot. Like it was rough for me to observe. Way. Yeah. Not in a good way.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought like mentors. No.
Eventually found great mentors, which was helpful. My story ended up being like more of a mentor by committee. You know, I think when I got early in the business, the prayer was, I was like, someday the clouds are going to part and there's going to be this advisor that's crushing it. And he's going to say, hey, Stan, come here. Yeah. I'm going to show you the way.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. But the answer to the prayer over time was, hey, this person is going to teach you this. Yeah. Hey, there's this person that can help you here. But I just didn't know the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had this deep desire. I was like, I want to grow the right kind of business mm-hmm. as quick as possible. But being in the dark a little bit, I think there was just some frustration there of like, I would do it if I just knew the way. And so I wonder if the challenge for us at times, because we have an audience and we get to talk to people, like the advice I don't want to give is, hey, just work hard and figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's enough clarity.
That's a burnout. Yeah.
I think as we've talked off camera before, like our practices look different. So I don't think there's the one way to do it or you're not doing it right. But I believe, and I've come to the point where if I have hours in a day,
mm-hmm.
I'm taking care of myself, I'm with my family, but man, I promised myself I wouldn't work mornings. I'd be home by 5:15 to help make dinner and hang out, and I don't work on the weekends. But man, if you meet me and you see me at the office between these hours, like I'm getting after it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for me, that's where when I see people kind of coasting or mailing it in, have balance, play golf during the week if you want.
Sure.
But I think at times there is a symptom there of like, I don't think you're giving it your all. And I think that's where I have a little more conviction now. Like when I talk to a young advisor or a coasting advisor, I'm like, there's more to give.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know how to get there yet, but the solution's there if you're willing to go seek it.
Yes.
And I think that's where I get the most passionate of like, just unlock everything you have. And that could look different. You know, we're all going to make the same amount of money or, you know, live in the same town, make the same amount of impact there, but are you giving your best? Is your full potential being reached?
Yeah, I used to somebody might think this is really unhealthy, but I still have pictures of my family in my office, but I used to keep a picture of my kids below my computer monitor. And I would look at that picture anytime I was playing office, like anytime I was screwing around or anytime I didn't have the confidence to close the deal. And I would envision myself having to call my kids and say, listen, like, we can't go to the park tonight because I want to read the Wall Street Journal for a couple more hours today. Mm. And so that would kind of like shame me like into doing it, right? Sure. So maybe not healthy motivation, but same kind of thing. I'm like, all right, do I want to spend like, and this goes to your point, like there's a lot of advisors that are spending 8 hours in the chair, but they're really only doing 1 hour of work. Like when you're in the office for 5.5 hours or that time frame is you're getting more done in that 5.5 hours than most guys are getting done all week.
Yeah.
Not because you're running twice as fast. You're just ruthlessly disciplined. Like, I'm only going to do the things that are going to deliver value to my clients and my team. Like, that's it. I'm not going to spend my time doom scrolling social media. If I'm going to go golf, or we talked about spending time on the lake, I'm going to block that time out. Like, it's not me avoiding something. Like, you're not taking your family to the lake because you're trying to avoid doing the hard work.
That's right.
You're not going to the golf course to avoid. You're saying, well, I've scheduled time for golf or fitness or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But I think kind of at the end of the day, my philosophy is you've got to find an advisor that you respect and whose business model you agree with. So whether that's charging for planning fees or not, or you know, you're Mike, you're charging 2% AUM fee, and guys are like, how can you charge 2%? Well, he does,
yep.
Right? Find a model, like, I believe in that, like Sten has the life that I wanna have. Already some aspect of what Sten has is what I wanna have. How do I learn more what Sten's doing? Cause like we could try to figure it on our own, like you and I did, that's a long path. But if somebody like yourself has got like, here's the way I went. And by the way, I built some tools, including some software to help you along that way. Like, why would I not take that opportunity? It goes back to your thing. Like, you dreamed, you prayed for someone to show me, like, dude, like, I'll do the work, but show me which way to work.
That's right.
Like, that exists now. It used to not exist. It exists now. So whatever you want, whatever any of us wants to accomplish, unless you're Elon trying to put rockets on Mars, in which case you got to figure it out on your own. Like, there's someone who's found that way.
Yeah.
Don't try to find it yourself. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, I think it's like intense curiosity.
Yes.
I think if that's something I could unlock in every advisor, and there's something that's tricky. I use the word a lot, resistance. Like, what in your life is holding you back from your full potential? Sometimes that's, you know, your leadership skills, maybe your communication skills need to get better. At times I run into like it's comfort. Like, it's these advisors making a few hundred grand a year, you know, that kind of did some grind.
Very dangerous.
And they're like, what's the motivation now? To do more, to try to unlock something. But I tell them, if I could teach you to work less hard, make more money, and help more people, are you open to something new? And I find a lot of advisors are, you know, those are ones that probably come to our events or we get to hang out with. But I feel like there's a lot that are like, no, I'm just going to kind of keep doing my thing. And you got to know what people you want to hang around with, you know? And I think there's for both of our style, like if we hang out around the wrong person, we're probably going to annoy them.
Yeah.
There's people probably trolling us online right now, right just now, because like the stuff we say triggers them. My hope is that people can, you know, if you're not being triggered or if you're using your being triggered as a sign of like, hey, there's probably something here I should unpack.
Yeah. Like your example with the planning fees. Like, why am I so like, oh, there's something here. Yeah. It doesn't mean you're wrong.
That's right.
You know, but it's just like, there's something there.
Is it worth unpacking?
I think it's always worth unpacking. I love your curiosity comment. Like, it's always worth unpacking. Now, you might unpack it and decide like, no, I'm okay. I'm okay making 500 or a million or 5 million or 10 million, whatever the number is.
Yep.
Like, that's okay. But definitely unpack that. Like, I feel like we always have to have an answer why. Like, why am I doing it this way? And you asked earlier at the beginning of this episode, like, where did my edge come from? Some of it came from people just telling me that, well, that was the way it had to be.
Mm.
Nothing has to be a certain way. Like, everything has consequences. You could say like, hey, you know, like if you steal something from the store, you're gonna end up in jail. Like, you can decide if that's the outcome you want.
Yeah.
That's not the outcome I want. Thank you for letting me know. But it wasn't just like, well, we do this because like, we do financial planning this way because like, I do one page financial plans. I joked earlier, it's not the 11th commandment. Like, I checked. It's just a great forcing mechanism for me. With my personality, my attention span, my niche, one page, perfect.
To the point. Right. Client gets what they need. They're happy.
It works for me.
Yeah, I look back at my career and I have this kind of trail of probably frustrated leaders because I was also the same way where I was like, you guys are doing it this way, but there's probably a better way. And at times I created enough friction to where the only option was I had to leave.
Yeah.
Because I think there was something in me that was like, I want to stay. Like, I want to be loyal, but I need you to explain to me why we're doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was at a firm once where they were getting a bunch of leads from a source and they were selling A-share mutual funds to everybody.
Ooh, ouch.
But it was so efficient. So you'd get these pops up front, but then all these advisors ended up with 1,000+ clients. And I remember being 24 saying like, I don't know if like, this is where I want to be. Like, I see it and you guys are making money, but I was like, I'd be creating something that I wouldn't want to have someday. And then I'm watching you take a third of your book and hand it to this 22-year-old advisor because now it's all, you know, quarter basis point trail revenue on A shares, and then you just pass them off, and the clients are like, wait, who's my advisor now?
And they're going to churn back through them again. Yeah.
And so I, of course, you know, I was like, well, why? I don't know if we should do that. And I just hit a brick wall. Well, because they already built this huge machine. And so I went to the next firm and I was doing my thing. I was like, well, it feels like we're just selling a bunch of life insurance.
Yeah.
What about AUM? Hey, can I have a custom website? You know, I was always felt like the squeaky wheel. And then the next firm, it was, I want to do financial planning now. And they're like, well, we do, you can charge $500 for a financial plan. And I was like, no, but this person wants to pay me a lot more. And I remember sitting with a managing director of a firm because this business owner wanted to pay me $20,000 for this engagement. And this managing director was like, that doesn't make sense. Like, I would never pay you 20 grand to be my advisor.
Interesting.
And I remember at the time, you look back at moments sometimes wishing you would have said something different. This time I look back and I was like, I said what I wanted to say. I was like, yeah, because I would never have you as my client. Like, you're not my target audience. Like, this guy makes more money than you do, and he wants to pay me. Uh-huh. Why are you saying he can't pay me?
Yep.
In hindsight, now that I run some organizations, I'm like, there was always things I didn't know about that they were dealing with on their side. Like, the firm was so big, they weren't going to change it overnight for me.
No.
But the ability to kind of see inefficiencies, call them out, it led me down a path of like, hey, I need to have a little bit more control. Because if I just wanted to make the most personal income, I could have stayed in those environments and thrived. But there was something in me that was like, I want to do it a different way. And I had to be in my own sandbox for a while, I think, to do that.
Yep.
If I could go back in time, I'd go into those conversations with a little more curiosity. Hey, why do we do it this way? Hey, try to teach me on like running an organization. What do you deal with that I don't understand because I'm just a sole advisor?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the intense curiosity in a humble way can be a superpower.
It really can be. And there's a big element of knowing yourself too, right? Like who wrote that book Driven, where they talk about there's just like 1 or 2% of the population is super driven.
Yeah.
And if that's you, which that includes like you and I, like we're super driven. We're always like, what's the next thing? What's the next level? If you're not though, you need to kind of understand that as well. Like in the independent space, people love to like poop on Edward Jones.
Sure.
Except the average Edward Jones advisor is making a lot more than the average like independent financial advisor.
Yeah.
And people say, well, how can that be? It's because they're not doing real financial planning. Well, whatever that means, I don't even know. But it's because for the personality type that thrives in a structured environment, like you and I, when there's walls, we like, what's on the other side of this wall?
Yeah.
Like that's just our nature. But other people, like if you don't have the discipline, if you know, like I'm going to spend the next 3 months trying to pick out the best website that's not going to make a difference in your life, you should probably just go work at Jones because they're going to give you a company site and they're going to tell you, quit screwing around, go out and prospect.
Yeah, that's right.
But for you and I, that would be terrible. Like if I have to use Jones's website and I'm not trying to pick on them, I'd say, great, I'm out. Like, go ahead.
That would be the deal breaker.
Yeah, that'd be the deal breaker.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is know yourself and put yourself in a framework. I think in some cases, the industry, Paul Sagne and I talked about this. He runs an incredible firm, Integrated Partners. They're several billion dollars. We talked about there was this huge push for everyone to go independent and nobody stopped to say, is independent right for everybody?
Yes.
Like it's right for a lot of people.
It was like, this is the best place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And for a lot of us, it is the best place to be, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
Not for everybody.
Yeah, look, I have a good buddy who runs a massive firm, Paul Blanco, and I remember I was interviewing him, and he challenged me on this, where he was like, I believe there's 20% of people that have it.
Okay.
Like, no matter what environment they're going to be in, they're going to thrive. And he said, there's 20% of people that don't. Like you could try, but like, it's just not going to work. But he said, I believe 60% of people, if given the right environment and the right guidance, can be successful in this business. And I appreciated that feedback, because when he said that to me, I was in a time where I was just frustrated with people. Like as a leader, I'm like, people just want more time off. Uh-huh. They want more income. They want to work less. Obviously, a good culture helps bring that out of people. And I had to own my part of like, why are these people don't seem to be like crushing it for us as a company? Where are you now with running organizations and coaching people? Are you generally optimistic with talent in the people? Or do you find yourself in a constant state of a little bit of frustration?
I actually just got schooled on this. I was last week, I was at Alex Ramosi's and I was working with one of his guys, a guy named Tim Kim. That's really his name, Tim Kim. Great guy. And I made this complaint. I said, there's just no A players out there. And he says, well, walk me through your process of finding A players. I said, well, I just call a recruiter and then I interview two or three people and I hire one of the three. He says, let me tell you our process. And he goes through and they spend all this money on a sales campaign and a funnel. And after they've done all the screening, they interview 25 different people for the position. Six of them, they give a trial run through and they won't hire someone until they've had 8 different interviews with the team. I said, Tim, dude, that's a ton of work.
A lot of work.
He says, yeah, that's what it takes to get A players. He says, so don't complain to me that there aren't A players when you, Matt, he was calling me out, which I appreciated, you're putting in a C-level effort at best and you're wondering why you're only getting C players.
Wow.
So that really just even recently shook me up because I had been kind of going on the path of like, you know what, me, an executive assistant, and I'm good there.
That's good. Yeah.
Like I can make as much money as I want to make that way. Yeah. But this goes back to like I'm holding back my skills from the world. So I'm kind of like I'm changing a lot on that right now.
Yeah.
And I have a great team. We have, I mean, I have 1, 2, 3 people at my practice, and we have 10 people at Retirement Tax Services and 6 or 8 at the Perfect RA. Like, it's like, we have people around, like, and they're great. They're all great people.
Yeah.
There's no disrespect to them. But it takes a lot of work. Like, it's a different skill set to run people. And it's easy to go to this, like, well, these are B players.
Yep.
That's why I'm not getting an A+ result.
Yeah. I was at XYPN talking about hiring.
Yeah.
Which when Michael asked me to come do that, it was after I did an interview with him about just all the mistakes I had made.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of fear for advisors hiring, even though they all know they should hire somebody mm-hmm. probably tomorrow. Yes. No matter how big your team is, you probably are missing somebody. You're probably overworking somebody. But it was that. I didn't have a process. It was like, hey, I'm going to put an ad out. I'm going to try to interview a handful of people and then say, let's give this a shot. And it was amazing. Like, that can hurt culture so bad. Like, a bad hire costs you. Alex was doing this when I went to his conference too. It was like, the cost of that can be devastating.
Devastating.
And I was a little reckless with it, you know. I was like, of course people want to work hard and thinking that was just the fact. And maybe I think they do, or they think they do, but it's my responsibility to onboard them well, to show them where we're going, to kind of motivate them to where it's like my season of business now, it's less can Sten build great financial plans. It's do I have the ability to kind of inspire people to come with me where I'm going? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm motivated every day because I see it and I'm excited about it. But as leaders, it's like, what are we doing to communicate the vision, inspire people, as opposed to, hey, everybody get on my back and I'll carry you there, which I tried, wasn't sustainable. And so I'm more optimistic now that we've built a hiring process. And mm-hmm. it's like, how do we screen them? What does it look like? Like, this should take some time to get through. I have my COO interviews them and then I interview them. In the past, we both kind of interviewed them the same. I think we probably asked the same question.
Probably, yeah.
We got called. I was like, no, those should be separate interviews. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe hers is on the practical side of working at the company and yours is more about the vision and are they on board for it? Yeah. So it was really fun to speak at that conference in Austin because I was there speaking not as like, hey, I'm the expert on this. I've solved it. It's like, hey, I think we're coming out of it and we're seeing some good results. But like, we're kind of beaten up and we got a limp at the end of the day because to your point, we were doing it in a subpar way.
Yeah.
And getting the same results and then being frustrated with it.
Yeah. 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 I think it goes back to what you said, Sten. You've got to be really intentional about where you're going. Like, what journey am I on? Right. Like, everybody gets one shot at life, right? As far as we know, you get one shot at life. Don't waste it. Like, you've been dealt one hand of cards, like whatever it is, whatever our skill sets are, we can all get better, which is amazing. Like, it's this greatest mm-hmm. miracle. Like, we can all get one step better. But yeah, be really intentional. Like, what am I trying to build here? And then don't make excuses. Like, that's where you need like good accountability. Is where am I making excuses, right? So I had that excuse about like, oh, there's only B players out there. Ah, it's because I'm giving a B effort. Oh, yeah. I needed somebody to hit me upside the head with that one. And so that's probably back to your early in this episode, like what would I tell people like early in history? You've got to find someone who can beat you over the head, who can just make sure you're not drinking your own Kool-Aid, who can call out your BS, who can hold you accountable. And you know, early in your career, you're money constrained, right? You can't just like, you can't call Sten Morgan and be like, hey, Sten, like, could I pay you like $250,000 a quarter to be my personal coach? Like, that doesn't exist. You might even take that. Even if somebody offered that to you right now, you'd be like, I don't do that. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
But there's settings for that. And so to surround yourself with people that are doing that is incredible.
Yeah. I do think for everybody listening, my question would be is like, what do you have on your calendar right now that is not an average effort to invest in yourself, but that's something somewhat radical. You know, where are you going? Who are you paying? Who are you shadowing? For me, at one point, it was like a speaking course. You know, mm-hmm. like, are you joining Toastmasters? And a lot of times, the level of discomfort that you feel thinking about it,
yeah,
it probably somewhat matches the result you might come out the other
that's
end
a good
with.
Question, yeah.
And most people I talk to, like, they don't have that thing scheduled yet. They don't know where they're going, where that training's going to be. But yeah, for me, it's been more on the leadership side of getting around leaders that make me uncomfortable.
Yes.
And when they say something, I'm just like, you know, to your point about the hiring process, I'm like, oh gosh, like that, I now have to sit in that a little bit because mm-hmm. just the thought of it freaks me out.
Dude, I think you hit on a critical thread here, which is being uncomfortable, right? Which feels cliche to say, sure. But yeah, whenever I'm being comfortable somewhere, that's like, it gives me alarm bells where I'm being comfortable. But I think that's what struggles a lot of advisors is like, I'm doing what's comfortable. And it doesn't have to be big dollar amount stuff. Like we joked earlier about stand-up comedy, like every town, every big town has a comedy club and they're all doing some kind of like open mic night or stand-up comedy class. And it's probably like $83 to be in the 6-week class and it will make you a better communicator, right?
Sure.
Now on the other extreme, like this year I paid literally $100,000 to sit in a room with Alex Ramosi for 8 hours. It was the best $100,000 I ever spent. Like, that made me wildly uncomfortable. But where else would I have a chance? He's got to be a billionaire at this point. Where else would I have a chance to talk one-on-one with him for 8 hours?
Yeah.
That was worth every penny. But earlier in my career, that obviously wasn't an option. Like, Micah and I spent last year, we spent, what is it, $30,000 or $40,000 each to spend a weekend with Jocko and his team. That was wildly uncomfortable. Like, there's big ticket stuff you can do, but there's so many small things. You can go to, like, on leadership, you can go to Dave Ramsey's, like, Entrepreneur Leadership Training. I think it's like $1,200 or something.
Yep.
There's so many things. Yeah. But yeah, if you're coasting, that's where you're dying.
Yeah.
It's killing you.
And I have found, and this is where I think you just have to say, there are people out there that are okay where they are, you know, that.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, the discomfort for them, they'll be attracted to people that are kind of reinforcing the things they're doing. And in our business, I find, and again, this goes back to my story of not having anyone say, mm-hmm. hey, there's a different path. Hey, yep. Do you try this? Like, it was so much average. Every firm I was with, you know, they held out like, here's our top producing advisor.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then I figured out like, well, I'm passing them already. Like, it just wasn't that motivating or challenging.
Yep.
So my hope is for our industry that, you know, we shake off some of the average, like, you know, I remember the term I heard in my first firm was crashing Ferraris, because they're like, every time they'd bring in a new recruit, and the amount of money they're spending,
yeah,
you might as well just go crash Ferrari. Because that, is there a way for us to address the attrition rate in our business? Or is that something we've just come to accept? I don't think we want it to be, you know, like the SEALs, they don't want everybody passing it.
Mm-mm.
Like, there needs to be something.
Yeah.
But it should probably be better than, you know, what, 2 out of 10?
Whatever it is, yeah.
After 5 years. And so I'm thankful that we get time to, you know, went through the trenches, got beat up from it, coming out the other side saying like, hey guys, like if you're going through the same place, like don't step here, go here.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you can get through it faster than we did.
Yeah.
But also like still being in, like, I love being in practice. I love being an advisor. I love this industry. Yeah. But for most advisors right now, there's a better way to do it than you're doing it.
That's guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed there's a better way to do it. There's some better iteration for all of us. That's why when you said, hey, I'm going to be in Vegas, I'm like, dude, can we get together? Can we do an episode? You're like, whatever, because there's always things that other people are doing that are better than me, right? And I know you're a student of the game as well. Like, all right, whoever's doing something better than me, like, how do I get around them? Maybe, you know, if you're listening to this episode, like, maybe you don't have the opportunity to sit here and one-on-one, but you and I both host conferences, we speak at events. And by the way, we're not the only ones crushing it. Like, there's a lot of advisors crushing it. We've now, as an industry, we're getting better about being generous about that. You can spend time with those, but just make sure there are people that are actually crushing it. There's a lot in every industry. There's a lot of people like talking a big game.
Yeah.
I'm known for pulling everyone's ADV. It's like, all right, you're at capacity. I pulled your ADV. You have 6 million in assets. Like, buddy, you need to get back to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an incredible industry. Like, I can't think of anything that's better. Nick Murray, who was a real mentor of mine, I've only met him once or twice in person. He gives this analogy, and it really landed home with me, especially when I have like head trash about our fees. And he says, go to your clients, your retired clients, and tell them they have an option. In the morning, they can wake up flat broke and they have to ask their kids for money, or they wake up dead. You just ask them which one they want.
Hmm.
And I've never asked a client that,
sure.
Like, but I think through that, like think through your clients, like your retired clients, and you gave them, I'm not trying to be morbid with this, but you're like, hey, you could run out of money tomorrow and have to borrow money from your kids, or it could just be your day to meet your maker. And a lot of people would seriously consider meeting the maker, not from like a suicidal pirate, but just to show the weight of what we do.
Mm.
Like if that was the trolley scenario, you're dead or you run out of money.
Yeah.
Death is a tempting thing for a lot of people, which means that what we do is more important than medicine. It's more important than their health. Like it's arguably in some ways by that mindset, it's the most important professional they have. And so when we have doubts about our fees or the value that we provide.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Like it's important what we do.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah, I think everybody listening, you are an entrepreneur, whether you like it or not.
Yes, you are.
Know, you have influence over people, whether you like it or not. And so I think taking that seriously.
Yes.
But also knowing there's not one way to do it. You know, I love hanging out with you because it's like there's different practices, but I do think there's some truths underlying all of that. That's
at 80%. I think the practices are 80% the same, and that 20% is where all the fun is, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's how your practice is structured or if you're at LPL or Edward Jones or Schwab or Carson or wherever, like that's that 20%, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, I'm curious, like what are you most excited about in your life right now? I know you got a lot of stuff going on. You race cars with your son.
I do.
Great stuff. You're here in Vegas. A lot of things to do here. At your season, because for everybody listening, I've realized there's seasons of time where I'm like, right now it doesn't make sense to think of anything, but I'm just building my practice.
Yes.
And at times I'm like, well, this is all I'm going to do the rest of my life. And I realized, well, that's not true. I've been through seasons where I was like, oh, this is it. Well, no, it's different now. So is the season you're in, what gets you the most excited?
Yeah, the season I'm in right now, in fact, I have my own personal mastermind in 2 weeks, and I'm going to work on this quite a bit. But last year, I had an eight-figure liquidity event with my practice, which I thought I would never do. You know, I've talked about that other times. And now it's what obstacle is equally as challenging as these last obstacles. So like you and I talked about when we were younger in this industry, like how would I have to take that same amount of risk today?
Wow.
Like how would I have to, not necessarily the same hours, I don't have the same hours in me anymore, but how, like what's a challenge that's equal to the challenge of building my practice or equal to the challenge of building a coaching program or equal to the challenge of having a liquidity event? Like what's the next round? Is that like get to 100 million? Is that like, what is that next big challenge? So right now I'm kind of just going to look for like you, I'm really good at working with clients. I'm really good at coaching advisors. I'm now really good at doing liquidity events. Yep. Like, all right, what's the next journey? Have you read Arthur Brooks' book, Strength to Strength?
I haven't.
Oh, must read.
Okay.
From Strength to Strength by Arthur Brooks. I'll be really brief on this. He talks about that as we age, that our brain changes, not just like we forget things, but like how our brain works. It changes. And if we fight that, we're going to be miserable. That's where these midlife crises come from. Like, oh, I'm not as sharp as I was when I'm 22. But a different kind, he calls it crystallized intelligence, like real wisdom, excuse me, comes in at this stage of life. I'm mid 40s, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, all right, how do I embrace that and lean into that? Like
nice.
The 22-year-old me that go out and beat the streets, like that's just not a thing anymore. Got the 44-year-old me, like there's a way to springboard that. I mean, look at, you ever pulled like the list of people that became billionaires in their 40s and 50s? Like there's all these people, like the most famous one is Ray Kroc from McDonald's fame. He didn't buy McDonald's until he was 52.
Goodness.
Colonel Sanders didn't start KFC until he was 63 or somewhere about there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, there's a, not that I'm going to go to fast food, but there's a long runway. And so it's like, what runway is going to keep me super challenged? The journey's all I've got.
Are you giving yourself permission to kind of enjoy this season and like chill, or does it feel like I got to get the next thing?
You know, the day after I got my wire transfer for my liquidity event, I called my book editor and said, I'm ready for the next book. I sent the deposit out. So my next book will come out in a couple of months. But,
nice.
You know, like I enjoyed it a little bit differently. Like I spent time with my kids more. I was already spending a lot of time with my kids, but I don't want to let off the gas. Like I don't want to be consumed by it, but like I said, I got one chance at life and I don't want to get down the road and be like, I kind of just pissed away those 5 years. Yeah. Like I rocked them. What about you, dude?
I appreciate you saying when you said the idea of like kind of embracing the next season.
Yeah.
Of like, I know it's going to feel different.
Yeah.
That doesn't,
different for
that
sure.
doesn't mean I need to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, I think there's another season of my practice where it's so reliant on me. And I think that hits a point where like, if I want to have balance in my life and be with my kids, there's not a lot more juice to squeeze from this model.
Yep.
And so, you know, the book 10X, 2X, like,
yeah,
I have to break it in a way to reinvent it. Cause if I just try to tweak what I'm doing now, it's just not going to get there.
Uh-uh.
And so it's, for me, it's, how do I build a system,
You
know, a funnel to where we add so much value to the world that our practice is attracting ideal clients without me having to be the point person on it?
Yeah.
And I'd love if in 2 years we look at and it's like, this practice can thrive if Sten wasn't here. That's moving from, you know, being just a grinder in my own business where it's like, I think for a lot of advisors, we create a job that we probably wouldn't want anybody else to have. We're overworked. Hopefully we can get paid well for it. Moving into like where now I'm more of a leader, where I have people that I can delegate stuff to that I trust, to eventually almost operating like an investor. Like if I'm gone, this business can actually thrive without me. Where I think there was a point where I was like, man, if I could be gone on vacation for 2 weeks and this thing doesn't burn down, I'm winning. And so, so for me, it's how can I now put legacy, my firm, in a place to where it can grow apart from my daily efforts? That's the challenge.
Yeah, which is like the true mastery of your craft, right? Like one level of mastery is that you can just crush it in a room. And then the next level is that you can get somebody else to crush it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, it's incredible, dude. I love it.
Cool. Brother, this was fun.
Dude, it's my pleasure, man. Sten, thanks for all you do, dude. I don't say this, like I'm not just trying to blow smoke, but I have so much respect and admiration for guys like you who like, dude, I could just keep this all to myself. Like I know you run into people all the time. They're like, Sten, why are you telling anybody else this? Right? Like you do, right? Like tell me this true. Like people say like, why would you tell anyone else how you do this? Right? And yet you're still like, you get paid for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, like you could get paid a lot more if you just doubled all your time in legacy. And so I just really, on behalf of everyone, I'm like, I want to thank you. That's how we met, was you just like, dude, let me share with people how I do this. So a lot of sincere gratitude that you share this message with everybody.
Appreciate you, bro.
Yeah.